to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, no fake stocks, Giants. I'm Tom Holly. This is Matt Weber on the board. This day futures up a whole 275. We're going to deal with the Fed yesterday and listen to Chairman Powell for a while, which is always a challenge for me. Matter of fact, yesterday I would have to say that I turned him off. I have him and the ridiculously softball questions that these nerds. I didn't really just say that, did I? Yes, I did. Lob at him. I can't freaking believe it. But the good news, I guess, is Saudi Aramco hits $2 trillion market cap on second day of trading. They're trading on the Riyadh exchange. I'm not so sure how vibrant that exchange is, but we didn't want them here, evidently, or they tried to be here and have been kind of messing around with this for years. But I don't even know. I'll try and check today if we could even do a trade there through one of our clearing firms. I don't think they have an ADR yet, but I will do some research on that today. I'll let you know. Wayne, how are you? Mr. Wayne Madison, how are you?
Well, it's beginning to look a lot like impeachment.
Yeah, and I got a couple of dollar bets out there saying I thought it was they would cut back to some kind of a censure, but I guess I'm wrong again.
It's hard to say what McConnell is going to do. He, of course, is looking at the political tea leaves in the Senate. If it comes between him losing his majority leader status and Trump, I think we may see McConnell cut a few Republican senators loose to come up with some sort of maybe a censure, sense of the Senate resolution. I don't know if the Democrats will buy that, but McConnell does have the votes to get it through. It's a simple majority for something like that, not two-thirds, of course, needed to remove Trump.
I actually believe that that's probably what's called for.
Yeah, the trouble is, of course, you know, when Clinton was impeached, there were some Democrats, of course, Joe Lieberman was rather one of the more noted ones who actually considered something like that. It turns out that they didn't have anything, you know, they didn't have enough on Clinton. But Clinton was rather chastened after that. It was the second term, but you didn't see him doing anything all that controversial. But the trouble with Trump is chastened and Trump don't go in the same sentence together.
Right.
He'll be worse. So I don't know whether the Democrats anyway and people like Mitt Romney would be satisfied to have a vindictive Trump emerge from the impeachment trial because Trump is known to say, well, I'm going to have the FBI or Justice Department go after my political opponents like a dictator would do in some South American country.
Very similar. What exactly does a censure do?
Actually, nothing. It will go down in the history books as something that was done. It won't really register on the scale of what happened with Andrew Johnson, who only survived by a single vote in the Senate. He was almost removed. Nixon, of course, resigned rather than go through the trial, which he would have certainly have lost. Goldwater told him, he said, you don't have a vote, you're going to be kicked out of the White House first time that would have happened to a president. Bill Clinton, of course, there wasn't hardly any votes to convict him for what he was charged with. A censure move by the Senate, I think, would be a blip in the history books. And you know, I think future historians would say, hey, listen, look at the, you know, with all the things he has done, Trump, and all he got out of that was a censure resolution, which does nothing. I mean, it doesn't cost the money. You know, it doesn't affect his presidency, the remainder of it. We'll see, but, you know, I mean, I think there'll be a lot of unhappy people with a censure. The censure might work if he, like, you know, Clinton, Nixon, of course, had resigned, but Nixon was very remorseful after Watergate and interviews he gave to people like David Frost. So, no, there would be no remorse from Donald Trump.
No, but, there's nothing like that.
I think
at all.
A lot of people would be upset about that.
No, his group is very defiant. It's a shame when you think about it, because everybody has a. I've mentioned this a couple of times when I talk to the Trumpies, the real Trumpies.
Yeah.
I don't try and engage in any kind of huge debate that much anymore, Wayne. But what I do.
I know the feeling.
Well, what I do mention though is it's not up to me to have an opinion about when you should go sour on your guy.
Yeah.
So the only thing I will say is that no matter who it is, when you're talking about humans, there's a line at which you're not going to cross. I mean, for me, the Hillary line was trades going to her account that weren't hers. I spent my whole life not wanting one trade in my account that wasn't mine, good or bad, and a lot of bad ones. And so, I mean, you could put, you know, the finest, you know, the finest CEO in the world, you know, a guy you really, really like, a guy like Matt Weber, and is a CEO, and if you find out, you know, 6 months later, he's cheating on his expense account, I don't care what his stock price is, he's got to go. I mean, there's lines at which, I said, it's not up to me to tell you what your line ought to be, but this idea that no matter what the man does, it doesn't matter, I can't go there. I mean,
Now, we just had him go up to Hershey, Pennsylvania for one of his, I call them mini Nuremberg rallies. And he refers to any president that refers to any American citizen as scum.
Yeah.
I don't believe is worthy of holding that office. We don't need that sort of rhetoric coming from the White House, because some people, of course, in his camp, that take that kind of language and turn it into, you know, marching into an elementary school or a high school or a church with a gun and start blazing away. And I just don't think that's presidential material.
You know, he doesn't.
You don't got to get this guy for a crime to impeach and remove. It's just that if he fails to uphold the oath of office, the Constitution, that's all it takes.
Well, I just, you can never really get a connection between, you know, somebody. I don't think anything Trump ever says. Of course, you know, it goes back to literature. Will nobody rid me of this meddlesome priest? And the next day, what do you mean? You killed the guy? What's the matter with you guys? You know, I mean, there's a certain rhetoric you put out there, and the idea that, oh, I never had any idea. You do have to realize that your behavior in a position of respect and authority, I think, makes a difference. Now, you know, there will be others that say it doesn't. He didn't shoot anybody. He didn't do that kind of stuff. But, you know, what's interesting, Owen, what I wanted to run by you today, and I've been reading, I haven't read it stem to stern, but I will at some point. This Washington Post thing about Afghanistan. And, you know what, in defense, if there's such a, I mean, in defense of the people who rally behind Trump and say, and I have people very close to me, and I'll say, well, look, the guy doesn't know if he speaks a true word, it's by accident. And, in their response, really, Wayne, is every single politician I've ever listened to my entire life, left or right, has done nothing to lie to me. This guy's just like bad at it, but he's no different.
Right.
And you know what? I don't know that it was ever on that sort of scale, but they're not wrong. In the sense
Yeah.
I mean, they really aren't wrong in the sense that every one of these guys that absolutely will lie to your face day after day after day, campaigns and everything. And you look at this Afghanistan thing, it reads to me like the fiasco in Iraq that we didn't do a study on, but the British did.
And yeah, it's sort of like the, remember the whole issue with the Pentagon Papers is that they woefully they told the truth about the situation over there. And, you know, I mean, Nixon wanted to, you know, put Ellsberg, Dan Ellsberg away. He was the DOD analyst for the RAND Corporation who released the Pentagon Papers. And you know, the Pentagon Papers were correct. And I think their release and when they were ran in the newspapers led to, you know, a loss of appetite for the Vietnam War. It was going in that direction anyway. But Afghanistan is like, it's like Vietnam times 10.
I'm saying, I'm reading it. I feel like we're the body. Our body counts next?
Well, you know, the difference is, we have, the troops we have in Afghanistan are in these forward operating locations. Occasionally they go out with their Afghan counterparts on certain missions or special forces operations going on. So we don't see the number of body bags coming back like we did with Vietnam, because Vietnam was just, the entire country was, under siege by the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese. So, We see body bags coming back, and every once in a while, I thought it was really bad form that Trump, you know, grabs John Voight, this actor who always seems to play a heavy in the movies. He grabs him and says, "Hey, you want to go out and, you know, see one of the coffins coming back from Afghanistan, like it's a tourist attraction?" Things like that, I think, I get the sense. I talked to a lot of vets who did support Trump. They don't support him anymore, especially after what he did with that special forces guy who got hammered by the court martial, going in and absolving him. That just ruined the uniform code of military justice. That badly affected the chain of command, and that's done probably more damage to the military than, you know, a compromise of national security information.
Well, obviously there's. There's people that can't stand the man because he's a boor in front of everybody. But the people who say other people have been boors there too. I don't know where to land on this, Wayne. To be honest with you, I know what side you're on, and other people are clearly on the other side. And I know my, but I mean, I would say that you look at the Afghanistan papers, that whatever you want to call it, the Washington Post stuff, the last three presidents. If you're an Obama supporter or not supporter, he was all part of it. George Bush was all part of it. I mean, there's three guys in a row. I mean, there's almost no difference. I mean, that's the weird part. I talked to Carl, and everybody's going crazy about these labor numbers back and forth. You look at the labor numbers every month; they're the same as under the last couple of years of Obama, or you know, under the last 4 years. I mean, they haven't changed. I mean, And I listened to Powell yesterday, and all I kept thinking about was these Afghanistan papers. Listen to the man stand there for an hour and a half with all the knuckleheads asking him questions. All the guy kept talking about is how there's no inflation, no inflation, no inflation.
Yeah.
I mean, Wayne, I did a thing last week. It took me 3 hours, and I found three spots where there's incredible inflation. It's totally calculated differently than these guys are telling us. Why can't he do that? I mean, if I could do that sitting here, trading for people and everything else all day long. That's his job.
He doesn't comprehend. He doesn't read. He, if he's told something, he takes the opposite point of view. It's just his way. I just wanted to add, I had the opportunity last week to just meeting a senior chief petty officer, a member of the SEAL team in Washington, and I was actually mildly surprised that he was so adamant about what Trump did to that with that that other SEAL. And this guy told me, he said, "Look, I know the guy. I served with the guy. We've been in combat together." And he says he's a jerk, and the guy who basically assaulted him is a jerk. I have never heard that one SEAL talk that way about another SEAL. So when I said, you know, the chain of command, the esprit de corps, the military morale was badly affected by what Trump did, I mean, I saw it firsthand because there was some sort of military function in Washington. I, met these guys afterwards, and you know, they were upset with that decision. I mean, yes, Trump is the commander in chief, but that decision was totally opposed by everybody in the military chain of command.
When what,
now he's talking about traveling around the United States on his campaign with that guy and a couple other guys that were released from the brig and the stockade who committed war crimes. I mean, it doesn't do much for the military to have a guy.
Well, and what exactly? Where exactly do you see? Obviously, you see these guys and what they're doing and some of the amazing work they do. And of course, they got their own TV show, Navy SEALs. Where do those guys come from? Do they come from, like, the Navy? They come from the Marines? Or what rank are they? How do they find them?
We have down here in Tampa, we have the U.S. Special Operations Command. It's co-located with the U.S. Central Command at MacDill Air Force Base. U.S. Special Operations Command consists of all the service special operations forces. So the Navy has the SEALs, the Army has the Green Beret, Air Force has their own elite unit. The name of it escapes me. But, so they all either they act individually or they act as a team in various missions, like, taking out Osama bin Laden. I think that was primarily the SEALs involved, but there were, of course, probably other special forces elements, like the Green Berets, also the Delta Force, in the Army that were also involved with that.
Well, I mean, if I wanted to become a SEAL, a little old, and I don't think I was maybe cut out for that, or if I could swim a zillion miles
in
the water.
They might invite us to one of their receptions, like I was last week in D.C. I was able to keep up with them on the drinking part, but I think that would be that would be the end of it.
It would be the end of it. But I mean, do I enlist in the Navy? Do I enlist in? Do I go to Annapolis? Do I enlist in the Marines?
Yeah.
How do I start?
Yeah, you would enlist in the Navy to join the SEALs, and then you would it's a rigorous training program if you're accepted. It's called SEER School. It's Survival Evasion. I forget exactly what it stands for. It's SERE. And not everybody makes it. I mean, it's tough, and you got to keep up your qualifications while you're in the field. Everything from physical fitness to mastery of weapons and things like that. So I give those guys a lot of credit. It's not easy. I mean, I was in Navy intelligence. I spent a lot of time, at consoles, but certainly, I could have never done anything like that.
Were you on ship or you on land?
Mostly on land.
I read this thing once where they were asking which country in the world their elite forces were the best, and this one guy's opinion was some outfit the British have. And
oh, the SAS, Special Air Services.
Because he was saying it comes down to not so much the people or the training. He said everybody has our training is spectacular, but I guess to be a Green Beret, you're like 1 out of 10 makes it. But now to be SEAL team, whatever the elite SEAL team, the SEAL team 5 or 6 or whatever one it is, that's 1 out of 10 SEALs make that team.
Right.
So you're into like 1 out of 100. And he said the British group is like another 1 out of 10 of those guys. It's like the third iteration where evidently Green Beret is 1 out of 10 people can do that.
When I was in Navy training, basically, the physical fitness stuff and the rest of it, I remember once we had a Navy SEAL telling us about basically swimming, and he said, what we do, I've done it. He said we went behind enemy lines in Vietnam, and put the limpet mines on vessels to, blow them up. And I said, so you were behind enemy lines in North Vietnam? He says, no, China.
Yeah.
That's a, you know, we didn't have the term mic drop then, but I think my jaw dropped when I heard that.
Well, I think some of that went on, to say the least. but you do wonder when you, you know, I've been kind of forming this idea. We almost need a constitutional convention everywhere. Way, I mean, there's stuff is slip sliding away here. I mean, everybody thinks all these guys are lying crooks. They're not all that wrong. You follow the money, and you got a Fed guy telling you there's no inflation. The same day, the two pitchers are going to make $1 million a start, for God's sake. The price of things in the one percenter world. What is the price of baseball teams gone up since 2008? Have they tripled? Anything that is, you know, anything that the cool guys wanted, it's monopolistic. Is just going through the roof. It's like money doesn't even matter. I mean, $1 million to start, really? And meantime, you know, next time we go over to series here, when you're in Chicago, we're going to pay, half a percent tax to help the White Sox out. They're paying people $30 million. I don't think they need my help. Just saying, you know.
Well, I've always wondered about how the taxpayers are bilked every time they need to build a new stadium. I mean, who profits from that? It's the owners. And why don't they just, you know, fund all the road improvements themselves rather than because, you know, Sewell brings a lot of money into the local economy and people are employed. What, people who sell a hot dog?
Yeah.
They're not making that much.
What was the financing of the Nationals' new stadium?
The consortium that brought the Nationals in from Montreal, they got the District of Columbia. Not only the District of Columbia, but where it's located, it also impacted nearby Maryland. So, there was a lot of tax money, and D.C. can well afford to be sinking money into that when they've got so many other issues. Of course, they're not a state. They're still in this district, federal district, where they don't have total control over their funding, but they got to be really careful about how they spend that money.
By the way, Chief Robert writes in, it's SERE, Survive, Evade, Resist, Escape. BUDS is the name of the school. 3 weeks long, recruits call it 2 weeks and one long day. It's apparently brutal.
Right.
So that's where you go to see if you make it, and if you go through there, then you keep going? Does that mean if I want to be a SEAL, that's where I'd go? And then
I think that's the initial hurdle. You gotta get through that.
It sounds like a long 3 weeks. Manny, would you be up for it?
Hell no.
Yeah,
kidding me?
You'd have to be pretty special. I bet you have to be, you'd have to be like a really good swimmer before you go. I mean,
you're
not going to learn it there. God. I know in some of those books where the guys were in, the guy wrote Hunt for Red October. I mean, he'd be
talking.
Yeah, he'd talk about people that were doing swimming in some of the rivers in Vietnam and how the parasites and stuff to get in their eyes and they're underneath their skin. I'm like, God.
Yeah.
It's one thing to do some swimming in Lake Michigan. It's quite another to go up some river in Vietnam where God knows what's in the water.
I prefer the rough duty, like having to hit some of the bars and Alangapo City in the Philippines. That's about as tough a duty as I
want to
have to.
Well, the lady who our friend Blair, who used to be the manager over at the Buckingham Club, and she lived downstairs for a while. Terrific lady. She went over to Thailand. Why? I mean, young people like to go all these different places. If I have to go anywhere, I got to take shots and stuff. I'm not going, Wayne. Just me.
Right.
So they're on this boat, you know, in a river, putt putt along, and some fish jumps out of the water and lands, and this guy's talking, he gets slapped in the mouth with a thing of river water while his drink's coming up to his face. He said the guy was sick for 2 weeks, horribly. Some parasite got him with just that little bit of water. Ugh.
Right. Montezuma's revenge comes in different varieties in different countries and has different names.
The Fed, I have to keep talking about these guys because they're doing the exact same thing they were doing in the 60s. Ignore, and pour money in to help people pay for stuff that they should have been paying for. This is just like we're paying for Vietnam, except we don't have a war on. We're paying for huge deficits, essentially. Well, I guess we're not really in peacetime, but sort of peacetime. I mean, I don't know. Would you call this peacetime? Or are we going to have wars against everybody all the time now, so it's never peacetime?
Well, this could be like the Orwell book, 1984, that we're in a constant state of war with somebody. And then you have the leaders say, your Asia is no longer the enemy, it's East Asia's the enemy, the listen to Trump's rhetoric, recent rhetoric, our enemies right now are Canada and France because he doesn't like their leaders. And apparently was caught at a meeting of, ambassadors to the UN. It's being reported this morning calling Macron of France and Trudeau of Canada names.
Wayne, again, I don't think that's... We got to get a break, man. Can you hang through the break? You hang through the break. We got Dow down 2 points. We got S&P up a buck. Not much going on this morning. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Giants. That time, always, Mr. Matt Weber on the phone or on the board. We have Mr. Wayne Madsen on the phone. S&P futures up a whole 75 cents. NASDAQ futures up 4.25. Individual stocks moving in the Dow. I don't have anything moving anywhere. Disney's the only one that's moving up 46 cents. Well, there we go. 3M's down 75 cents, but nothing much there at all. Dow down 2 points. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 12. Call that flat. FTSE up 40.6%. Kick around up 2, call that flat. So not much going on there as well. Nikkei up 32.1%. Shanghai down 8.3%. Hang Seng up 3.48. There we got something moving there. Up 1.3%. The Hang Seng has been easily the most volatile of the indices in the last few months. And obviously a lot of that has to do with the demonstrations and so forth over there. And bonds, 10-year, 1.79. The Bund minus 0.33. Japan is back a little bit more in the negative. Never made it to even, I don't think. Minus 0.02 now. We've got gold up $5, 1480. Silver up 10 cents, 1686. Gold had a pretty good rally yesterday as well. We've got oil up 17 cents, 58.93. Pretty much the high end of the range recently. Brent 64.10, up 38 cents. This is the one here. Natural gas up 2 cents, 227. One of my guys that used to be on the show before he got a different job, Mr. Tommy Shanahan, called me yesterday and said, hey, make sure you tell everybody that the January number, the January natural gas number, is below the July number, and the first time like anybody can remember, because the futures have different months. There's not only has ever been a time when January was below July, and it is. RBOB 162. So he's predicting, Wayne and Maddie, less than $2 natural gas. Well, that would be something. Anybody got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a couple of issues already to report here on a Thursday morning. I-57 northbound just before 107th Street. There is a crash that's on the inbound side that's causing some stop-and-go traffic on I-57, so keep that in mind if you're coming in from the south side. No issues on the Ryan. Looks like the Bishop Port is okay too. Stevenson crystal clear right now, which is good news. Traffic starting to build out west on the Ike, but nothing out of the ordinary there. Same for the Kennedy and Edens, but no accidents to report. Off the expressways, we have a crash Irving Park Road at Roselle Road in the western suburbs. And then just west of that, Bartlett Road at Naperville Road. There is a crash in suburban Bartlett. And north of there, there was an earlier crash on the Jane Addams Tollway, I-90, on the inbound side just before Beverly Road in the northwestern suburbs. That crash has been moved to the right shoulder and is out of the way, but still a bit of a slowdown there as you're coming in from Elgin. Everything else looking okay out there, though. Weather today, we warm up from where we've been the last couple of days this afternoon. Overcast skies, but with a high of 45, so we'll pretty much double up where we were the last couple of days. Right now it's still cold, partly cloudy skies, and 26 with a wind chill of 12. We're going up to a windy overcast high of 45 today. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 68. Right now it's clear and 47. In sports, the Bulls blew out the Hawks last night at the UC, 136-102.
How bad are the Hawks?
Not good. Bulls improved to 9-17 on the young season. Suns lost at home to the Grizzlies, 115-108. Not a good night for the Phoenix Suns. College hoops last night, it was Illinois over number 5 Michigan in Champaign. Don't let anyone tell you it was an upset, because Illinois was actually favored in that game, but still, beating the number 5 team is a nice accomplishment. 71-62 was the final in that one. Arizona took care of Omaha, no problem, 99-49, a 50-point blowout win. And it was Arizona State outlasting Prairie View A&M, 88-79. And lastly, legendary White Sox broadcaster, 78-year-old Hawk Harrelson, won the Ford C. Frick Award, given out by the Baseball Hall of Fame.
an honor. Hawk actually becomes the fifth Chicago announcer to win that award, Chief. Can you name the other four?
I bet I can. Jack Brickhouse.
That's
Harry,
one.
Harry Carey.
That's two.
I'm going to say Jack Quinlan.
Nope.
Okay. Who was the guy in the White Sox before? Carey and Brickhouse. God, why am I running out of gas here?
Carey and Brickhouse, and then Hawk. Those would be the three. But the other two, Milo Hamilton.
Oh yeah,
and Bob Elson.
Okay, I was gonna say the guy in the Sox years ago, which would have been him before he was on the radio, right?
And that's correct. And Pat Hughes will definitely win this at some point.
Because Brickhouse did both the Sox and the Cubs TV forever.
Right. Right.
And Elson was on the radio at that time, I think. Well, Jack Quinlan, let's say, would have done it if he wouldn't have died young, because he was probably the best of any of them.
I don't remember him, certainly.
Well, he died when I was young.
But yeah, you could be right on that. But yeah, Milo Hamilton was inducted in 92, or won the award in 92. Harry Carey, 89. Brickhouse, 83. And Bob Elson, 79. And now Hawk in 2019.
Well, when Brickhouse had Lloyd Pettit helping him, to this day, was probably the best hockey announcer in the world. Of course, hockey was different back then. There were only six teams. He would leave. Wayne, he would actually leave the broadcast booth for the helping Brickhouse out and go to all the different camps. And this is before you wore helmets. And somebody asked him one day. He goes, "How can you read the numbers that fast?" He goes, "What are you talking about? I know all these guys. I never look at the number. Right. I look at the face." Which obviously you can't really do now. I suppose you still sort of can, but.
So going back to the last segment, gentlemen, we got a Twitter message. I think Wayne is wrong about McConnell's choices. It isn't censure or trial. It's whether to let each side make a statement, vote, and be done with it, or have a trial that includes the witnesses Schiff wouldn't allow the Republicans to call in the House hearings.
Well, there's a lot of speculation because this is sort of uncharted territory. There's also the issue of the Chief Justice who will sit of the actual trial, and there's now a lot of questions as to what are Chief Justice Roberts's, you could say Roberts' rules of order, as opposed to what the majority leader can do. So we're really again in uncharted territory. I think is the
I don't know if you knew that, Matty. The Supreme Court.
McConnell, if he wants to be totally obstinate, and we hear what he may do now is just have each side present its case, send it over for a vote, and then that's it. It'll be the charges will be dismissed, and Trump will be acquitted.
I guess we just brought up Wayne. I was going to ask you that, as they say in the South Side, who's in charge of this, Roberts or him?
Yeah, this is going to be interesting. We know that in the last impeachment trial, Chief Justice Rehnquist wanted that thing to be over with. He was suffering from a very bad back. He actually brought a deck of cards to the Senate. He was totally bored with it. When it came down to the actual vote on the articles of impeachment, you might recall that, they're down into, they go alphabetical order, and Rehnquist knows this thing's going to be over with. And then we get down to the S's, the senators whose last name starts with S. And Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania, then a Republican, gets up and says, his verdict is, not proven. It's either guilty or not guilty. And he says not proven. Then he goes into this long soliloquy about under Scottish law, you can actually be proven, it can be not proven. And Rehnquist, who clearly was in pain, stops Specter and says, "This isn't Scotland, Senator." So they ruled it as not guilty. And it proceeded.
God. Well, I will say this, that maybe to his credit, maybe to all our benefit, Trump has managed to rip scabs off a lot of stuff that people have no idea what the process was, and know there really isn't the process. I mean, I'm guessing if I'm the Supreme Court Justice and I come over, I don't want to hear it from McConnell. Why would I?
No, well, we don't know. I'll tell you one thing. We know that the Chief Justice, historically, they don't comment on what the president says, but when Trump was calling various federal judges by name, you know, calling them names, essentially, saying, oh, that was a Clinton judge, or that's an Obama judge, Robert spoke up and said, look, when it comes to the federal judiciary, we don't have titles, party labels. We have the judiciary, and he cautioned Trump from the position of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court not to engage in that kind of rhetoric. So he's not happy. He's not happy with Trump anyway. We know that from what he said then. And so the issue with Donald Trump is now who will represent him as his legal team? Will it be Pat Cipollone, who's actually White House counsel? His job is to protect the office of the president. Or will Trump roll in his personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani? And now they're talking about he may add to that team Alan Dershowitz. Now, there's a law firm from hell, Giuliani and Dershowitz.
Yeah, wow.
And that would turn that Senate trial, I'm sure, into a three-ring circus, and that may be Trump's intention.
But, I mean,
now,
who even...
How McConnell accepts that? I don't think he will, because he's been there long enough in the Senate. He's kind of an institutionalist, and if he sees Trump making a circus out of the Senate trial, he may then not rule or make decisions in Trump's favor, because he's looking at next year, and all the GOP Senate seats that are up, including his own, and so it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
If you don't know this, who the hell does? Who sits where? How does the thing even get set up? Where do the lawyers sit? Does Trump show up? Does anybody have any idea how this is supposed to come down? Is there somebody dusting off a rule in the back room somewhere, a little booklet that says this is how you do impeachments?
Yeah, we saw it with the Clintons. The senators remain in their seats, their desks, actually. The Chief Justice will assume the position where the President Pro Tem of the Senate usually sits. Then there'll be, if you see you'll see it on C-SPAN. You see, there's right below the President Pro Tem's podium. There's a bunch of desks, and there you'll have the House managers, who will be the Democrats who bring the articles of impeachment over from the House. There's going to be two articles, as far as we know now. One on, I believe, is abuse of his office, and the other one escapes me right now. I'm not sure it's obstruction. And then at the desk will be Trump's legal team, and if he wants to be there, I mean, he'll be invited to attend his trial. Andrew Johnson attended his. Clinton didn't. Clinton sent his legal team over there to argue against it. So that's how it'll work in the physical description of the trial.
Well, so the being impeached and being removed from office are two separate things, correct? And then he can
impeachment is like an indictment. It's like a grand jury. In this case, the House returns an indictment, and then it goes to a trial, and that's held in the Senate. So impeachment, we'll see. Impeachment will happen. Trump is going to be impeached. He probably won't. The votes right now, there aren't any enough votes. With 67 required, two-thirds majority of the Senate, to have him removed from office.
Well, you can't be, the Senate can't, like, convict him of something and leave him in office. There's no middle ground there.
No, there's no middle ground, and I mean, they may try to do something like a censure, but that won't have anything to do with the impeachment itself.
Well, even if he gets tossed out, which I doubt will happen, can he run again?
You mean further articles of impeachment being delivered?
No, no, no. Can he run again in November?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, the rule is he cannot never hold any office under the United States. That's the language that's actually in the impeachment resolution.
I've read
the House.
We had some people on this week and said he could. Why? Where are they getting that?
You know, I mean, I think we're talking federal office. Again, we haven't been on this ground before because we never had a convicted president. Could he run for the Manhattan Borough Council? You know, I it's hard to say, but that would apply certainly to every federal office, as they say, under the United States. That terminology makes it sound like it's federal office when they say under the United States.
I had a vote because he ran unopposed. The guy in my district got booted out of the Senate in Illinois, and he ran again and won.
Yeah,
and then you can't boot him out again for the same crime because the voters have spoken. What the hell is that all about?
There's a member of the House from Florida, Alcee Hastings, who was impeached as a federal judge and removed from the bench and ran for the U.S. House. So, obviously, it doesn't apply in that case. But the language is on the president. It's pretty specific when it says will not hold any office under the United States. Again, I mean, that's why you see all these constitutional lawyers. You know, this is a time where you get your, you know, you make your name on television if you're a constitutional lawyer. You know, you're called on these shows, and I remember it wasn't impeachment, but it was the O.J. trial. Greta Van Susteren made her career on television just because of that trial. So we're seeing a lot of other of these TV careers being made right now by constitutional lawyers.
Did she know a lot about white Ford Broncos or what?
Yeah, well, she's no longer with the big cable channels. I don't know where she's at now, but. That fame is only fleeting, apparently, when it comes to TV lawyers.
Well, you know what Mr. Weber here, our producer, has been secretly doing on the web? He's been holding himself out as an expert on extraterrestrial activity. So when the saucer lands in front of the White House, like in the movie, he's going to be called upon by everybody to be an expert.
Oh, okay. So he'd be like Jeff Goldblum character and Independence.
Exactly right. Yeah,
that's good.
By the way, Natachi writes in, Chief, please stop saying approvingly that Trump is ripping off scabs. It is never a good idea to rip off scabs. It causes bleeding and infection and delays healing.
I'm not saying. By the way, I tried not to. One thing you do learn when you do something, when you do a podcast show, whatever you do, it's not what you say and what people hear. I think everybody always thought, Wayne, that, like, you knew what attorney-client privilege was.
Yeah.
Until Trump had a guy running around paying off debts for, now is that it? I mean, now all of a sudden, no, does anybody even know what attorney-client, I mean, I'm saying there's definitions here that we never thought we had to go, and he's taking us there.
Well, we saw what Michael Cohen did with his attorney-client privilege.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
When he realized, you know, hey, I'm heading to the slammer. You know, I'm the heck with that. I'm going to tell all. And I guess in Trump's case, instead of ripping off scabs, you could just maybe say ripping off hair plugs might be appropriate in this case.
Or we could say delving into corners of the law where no man has gone before. How's that?
Yeah, not even Perry Mason would be able to figure out some of this stuff now.
Oh, I know. But you know, I keep the theme that I've kind of had all week, and I honestly, as I'm trying to listen to everybody, Natachi knows, I'm trying to listen to everybody. This whole thing about, you know, Trump being the fantastic liar that he is. I tell you what, though, Wayne, the last week, I've been reading the whole thing about Afghanistan. Okay, now everybody involved in that, generals and people all up and down the line, the White House, Obama White House, Bush White House, they're all involved in this BS they've been handing people.
Sure.
And now, this week, this morning, you know, Trump's running for the president, and people look at the people that are running against him. There isn't a fourth grader that believes that Bernie Sanders' healthcare system paid for by the financial world is a winner. Then this morning came out that some independent group says that what's her name, Mrs. Shrieky, her wealth tax is going to fall $1 trillion short.
Elizabeth Warren.
Nothing told by any of these people is the truth, and I do think that it is somewhat unfair, as much as I can't stand the guy, to single Trump out as being, quote, a liar in Washington. Find me somebody who isn't.
Yeah, the issue with the Democrats is the people who are really known as policy wonks. Warren is one. I mean, she was professor. Now we see a Buttigieg. You know, he talks about he was in the military and over in Iraq, serving combat. But now it comes out what he was doing for the McKinsey Corporation. I've done a lot. I know a lot about the McKinsey Corporation. When they show up at your business, your multinational corporation, it's not a good sign because layoffs are going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
And massively so. And, you know, he's trying to say, well, I didn't make those decisions. Yeah, no, but you provide the input to the people who provide the report to the corporate officials who make the decision, and it usually, 9 times out of 10, or maybe even more than that, the company goes with what McKinsey tells them to do. And so now we're starting to see what these, you know, and so I think this is why Joe Biden is leading in the polls, especially in states like South Carolina, because the African-American voters, Democratic voters there, they said, we know Joe. You know, Pennsylvania, we know Joe. He's not like a wonky guy. He's been doing government stuff. But when you look at Bernie Sanders may be in the Senate, but his whole career was as a member of the Socialist Workers Party. He wasn't even Democrat. He's the kind of guy you'd find at a protest with a card table set up, and he's trying to sell you newspapers and literature for, you know, 50 cents or a dollar, and then trying to tell you what's in it at the same time. You know, people, I think, figure that out.
Well, I mean, in the last week, we've had the job reports. Everybody is gushing about these job reports this week. It's like the entire country, you know, men and female alike, have taken a double Viagra or something. And in fact, this year, the jobs have averaged 183,000 a year, and last year there were 220. Okay, and this year, I mean, we had a 260 number, and now we had months before 128 and 135. So if you average the three together, you're right back at 180. Which is, you know, so I mean, and then we have the chairman of the Fed coming out and telling you for an hour and a half how there's no inflation, and yet in 20 minutes or less, I can explain to you how we have all kinds of it all over the place.
Are these guys only delivering good news because they know if it's bad news, they're going to, you know, trigger the Trump tweeting machine?
Must be.
You know, I mean, obviously, we've never seen a president before make the comments about the chairman of the Fed like he's said about this Jay Powell, who he appointed, who he nominated.
Well, in the immortal words of Milton Friedman, when I had him in class, he would say that how did he phrase it? He said the first vestiges of inflation are such a good feeling, they're like your first beer. He's in it, but you've got to be careful, because when you go from the 2 to 3 to 4 to 5, and all of a sudden you got trouble, because coming it back from the abyss, this is long before the late 70s, because bringing it back from the abyss is so painful you never want to go there again. And yet, here we are, we're going there again. I mean, we're talking about this year, and if you don't, and plus, I think people are smarter than this. I really do, Wayne. They're talking about how this year, the Fed is going to increase the balance sheet by, you know, $750 billion. Now the government is going to run a $1 trillion deficit. He's basically just told you, I'm going to print money to cover 75% of it.
Well, you know, I think maybe we need to dust off what Gerald Ford did about inflation. Remember the win buttons?
Yeah.
With inflation now, maybe we got to dust those off and have people wear those again.
Well, how long can we ignore the entire healthcare part of the? I mean, Carl's convinced in 2 years the government's broke, because if you look at the Medicare lines and the, I mean, that we, and even the amount of people being hired, if you count, what do you say, Maddie? I forgot the number. Was it 60% are being hired in the healthcare industry, or 50? I mean, some huge number. And he goes, 90% of these people will never touch a patient. It's all overhead.
Right.
I mean, it's just so. So nobody really knows. There's no written book somewhere that says, okay, this is what the Chief Justice does, and this is what the Senate Majority Leader does. Who makes what call and where?
Yeah, we don't have a lot. You know, we've got the Andrew Johnson case. And by the way, there people are saying that a president has never been impeached in his first term. That's not entirely correct. Remember, Andrew Johnson succeeded Abraham Lincoln, who was assassinated. And so he was impeached during his time in his first term, or his the uncompleted term of Abraham Lincoln. A lot of this you got to go back into the archives and start dusting off those old documents and see what did they do here. We didn't have the situation with Nixon because he resigned first, and then we got the Clinton case, and Clinton was almost like that was a vindictive impeachment brought about by Newt Gingrich. So, you didn't have fundamental violations of the oath of office involved so much with Clinton.
We're just being sort of a kid. Wayne, thank you very much, buddy. As usual, good stuff. When this moves further, we'll get you back and see what they're actually going to do. SP Futures up a quarter, 25 cents. NASDAQ Futures down 250, nothing going on. Be right back, Mr. Freyheimsie.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hi, This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Lord of Picks, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly. Mr. Warburn aboard. Mr. Exactly Ferrari Hamsey in a few minutes. SP Futures now down 350. It's a little bit of a dip here. Not sure why. I'm looking all over. I know what caused it or didn't cause it. It's only $3 move, so not that much. The NASDAQ Futures down 16 and a quarter. Got Apple down 277. So whatever it is, probably affected Apple. Well, must have something to do with the trade deal. Boeing down a buck and a half. 3M down $1.73. So Maddie, the two signings this week of these pitchers, what does it tell you about the economics of baseball? We're either not getting the numbers right, or people are paying up, or what's going on here?
Well, Gerrit Cole and Strasburg is who you're talking about. Two of the best pitchers in the game, of course. Strasburg coming off of a World Series championship, Cole coming off of an AL championship and won the World Series the year before. You know, both got near what? $30 to $36 million a year.
That's what I'm thinking. Well, it was over 30, which I think
I know. Gerrit Cole is $36 million a year for 9 years at 29 years old. Which, to me, I mean, I don't think that's a very sound business decision. But you may get 3 or 4 great years out of him, and is that worth it?
Other than
having to eat the next 5 or 6 years, I don't know.
A reasonably well, in the near years older dude. The only. You know, since, how should I say this, without the effort of steroid era, but the only guys I think that were worth it were probably Nolan Ryan and John Lester. I mean, John Lester actually pitched very well every year of his extent. His was like 6 years, right?
Yeah, and this coming year will be his last year with the Cubs. And you're right, he has been very, very solid for the majority of that, including winning a World Series and being kind of the number one or number two guy on those playoff teams. This last year, he wasn't quite as good, but he was still, you know, very solid. But yeah, it's very rare that a pitcher signing a long-term deal, and this is a long-term deal, a 9-year deal at age 29. Maybe he proves us wrong and he's really good through age 34 or 35. You still have 3 years after that.
Yeah.
At, you know, $108 million. That's a lot of money, I would think, but maybe not if you're the Yankees. I mean, they reported something like, I don't know, $600+ million in revenue last year.
Well, and they're going to give a sixth of that to one guy.
Well,
no, $30 million.
Yeah, they're giving him $30 million. Yeah,
that'd be 5% to one person, which is still a lot. I just wonder what the there's kind of. Two ways you do this, and I'm going to go back to my inflation argument. Hey, Farry, how are you, bud?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah. Hey, I got to hang with me here for a second because Maddie and I were just talking about these two baseball contracts, and I'm going to say that there's two reasons why you come up with a contract like that historically, and sometimes the wins you win, sometimes you lose, and now when the Lakers paid Magic Johnson $1 million a year for 25 years. They caught the inflation bubble just right. So 3 years later, you know, the guy was sorely underpaid, right? And they ended up having to, just because they're embarrassing themselves, basically had to redo the guy's contract. Whereas the Cubs did the same thing with Soriano. And I don't think they felt that in, well, he was 8 years, right, Manny?
He was something like 8 years, $136 million.
So I'm saying with the bet you make here, I mean, again, this is the economic bet. I'm not going to the Yankees' minds. Who knows what they're thinking. But the bet you make here is that with Soriano is that the guy's a, on a scale of 1 to 10, he's a number 8 outfielder, they thought he was. And even if he's a 5 or a 6, 6.5, 7 years from now, the going rate for an outfielder at that time who's you know, reasonably above average but no longer a star is going to be $8 million. And the Cubs totally putzed on that estimate because we ran into a time where the economy wasn't doing so good, blah, blah, blah. And it turns out that an average outfielder, by the time he was in his eighth year, you could pick up for $3 million, right, Matty? So they totally putzed on the prediction, not so much the player, because he actually was pretty good for 8 years, right?
Yeah, he was solid.
Yeah,
the timing definitely does play into it, although that contract is nothing compared to what guys are getting.
No,
now.
What I'm saying, but the mentality is the same. So now, part of this, now, what I'm asking is, for the 9 years, are the Yankees thinking, not only is this guy going to be really good for the next few years, but even if he's a 500 pitcher 9 years from now, 500 pitchers are going to be making $30 million, and it's no big deal. Now, I don't know, given the state of the economy right now and the growth that I see, I'm not so sure I would make that bet.
I don't think that's the bet they're making.
I think
the bet they're making is that for 4 or 5 years, he's going to be elite, and we would pay more than $30 million a year for that. And then afterward, you know, we'd maybe only pay 15, but we got 45 worth in the first half of the contract.
Which begs the question, if he said, I'm only going to do it for 2 years, what do you think the number is for 2 years? It can't be $45 million. It can't be $1.5 million a start.
I think if Gerrit Cole wanted a 2-year deal, I think he could absolutely get $45 million a year.
Really?
Okay. I mean, if he got $36 million over 9 years, his agent would never let him do that. But that would be idiotic.
But unless you're thinking like I'm thinking, hey, because I'm saying there was a time where you signed people for these what appeared to be ridiculous things. Michael Jordan, the same thing. By the time it was his last year, what he wasn't even a top. How many? He wasn't even a top 40 player, was he?
No. I mean, I think if you really bet on yourself, you really should sign just 1 year or 2 year deals. But with injuries being a factor, that would just be a stupid thing to do. You should always take the long term money.
All right. Well, enough of that, Fari. What do you make of the market?
Well, I guess Matt is negotiating my next contract.
Well, yeah. I mean, the chances of the amount of innings that guy pitches.
You got a deal, Mari. You got a deal. All right.
Well, the chance of him being a top 10 pitcher 8 years from now is just...
It's not almost non-existent.
It's almost non-existent.
Yeah.
I mean, it could happen. You could be, you know, how many people were like that? Nolan Ryan, Warren Spahn, people like that, but there weren't very many. And he's probably a Hall of Famer. I mean, it's not like he's not that good, but, well, whatever. It just kind of changed some. So far, we have coming up to the end of the year, we got this big tariff thing this weekend. There allegedly is going to be a big powwow in the White House tomorrow. You know, and I'm meeting them what they want to do. I don't know. It's kind of a toss-up. You see the market not going anywhere, but the VIX is, you know, it's 15.5, which is not high, but it's not low either. It's also,
look at the skew. Look at the skew giver.
Yeah.
Dangerous signal yesterday that don't be asleep at the wheel. Something is brewing out there. I mean, the tail risk on the downside exploded. So I'm long, but I don't know if I buy it.
Well,
it's just that I'm going to probably cash out what I got and get out and possibly get shorts. I was actually thinking about it last night, but let's see how today goes. Of course, the time of digest, you can't, you're nailed from the day before, right? It's based on the close. So, what's NASDAQ doing right now? Let me take a look.
It's down 16. We're dipping a little.
Dipping, okay. Yeah. We're down 3, yeah. I mean, usually, this is not a huge signal day one, unless it's news-driven. The big day is day two, but we could be there. I mean, you know, we could be a small move today and then explode down tomorrow and then really follow through on Monday, but where's the catalyst? I just don't see a catalyst yet. Somebody knows something to put a bet like that on the to move the skew that much, SKEW. This is a terrorist kind of SPX options. And that's not mom and pop. That stuff is expensive. Somebody big is doing something, or several guys big are doing something.
What I've noticed with some of the, I get the feed from Dr. J's group on the unusual option activity, and it's
but this is a different problem.
No, what I'm saying it's the a lot of the.
I mean, those guys, that, a lot of that stuff is still mom and pop. This thing is huge.
Well, but my point is that a lot of the big trades you're seeing are now very short term. Or they're like February or something, February, January. Right. They're out there, so it's especially stuff in the SP, the Spider, and so forth. It's moved. You're right. There's people wanting big time insurance for those first and second quarters and of next year, and they're buying out of money puts, which is what's causing the skew to move.
Yeah. Well, the thing is this. This has been very quiet for the last, I think, month or two. It basically said we're going to be rising. There was no downside terrorists. Remember, you have terrorists on each side. This measures the downside. And it wasn't there, so we rose. All of a sudden, actually night before last, I don't know how it did last night. I should take a look. And it's not real time. It's reported at the end of the day. So, and I had last night, we had a huge day on NQ. We did some ridiculous number on NQ. It was a P&L. So, but we had to go through and verify everything, and I had one of my gals, who's like one of a forensic accountant, go through all the trades and all that. So I took my eye off the ball on this issue, but back of my mind this morning was, I gotta check this queue again to see where we are. Usually, it doesn't fail. The other problem I have is Russell Russell and Transportation. By the way, I noticed CNBC is starting to talk about that too. That, hey, how come these two are behind? Usually, they give us a warning sign, so we shall see.
Well, when you're in the managed money thing like I am for people, it's very, so we say the behavior, the how well you're doing is really, I mean, even in indexes, it used to be that if you picked, they always moved around in somewhat independently, but this year, in January, February, and I mentioned this earlier in the week, I put a real lot of money to work just because I ended up with a new group that subcontracted Wall Street Advisors, which is PTI's investment advisor firm, us to do a lot of protected probe stuff for them. So we had a whole lot of cash came in basically a couple of weeks. So I talked to everybody, as you always do, and we were picking. Some people wanted the SPY, some people wanted the QQQs, somebody wanted Russell. Some people like some money in the XLE. Which is the oil. Now the XLE, even though oil's up 10% this year, the XLE is down. You know, so if you're in that one, you're not participating. The Russell's barely up. I mean, it's barely up. I mean, QQQs are pretty much a high flyer because that's where your fangs are in. And then the S&P is done pretty well because it still has a lot of, you know, fang stuff in there. And the Dow, if you took Microsoft and, Apple out of the Dow, that's 1,100 points in the Dow. So it's very, very narrow. I mean, you could be managing money for somebody who wanted to be in the Russell that liked the idea that small cap usually leads the market, and all of a sudden this year, what the hell did you do for me? You're the one who picked, you picked that one. Well, I don't care. I want to buy 25%.
The narrow band also, Chief, the narrow band also tells us something, too. It's a narrow number of stocks.
Yeah.
Historically is where they're hiding, the bigger guys are hiding their money because other stuff is not responding. Okay? Advanced declines are those same thing. Look at Michael Oscillator. There's very little participation, so they're running for safety before they start their sell. I don't know what's going to cause it. I just have a feeling we're close. I'm not picking the date, I'm not picking the week, but it's like sitting out here, looking at the lake, and you see these ripples on the water. Water is very still, but there's some ripples. And then you see some other ripples coming in and interact. It could be alligator, could be a duck, could be a number of things as you look at it. As they interact, you have a totally different animal. And we'll see. Historic. I mean, look at how we dropped in August so far, 15. For 10 days, everybody laughed at me and said, why are you short? So I just don't have the stomach for getting long here, you know? So I'm going to stay short and see what happens. You know, maybe risk 1% on the upside. And then it broke. And you saw what happened in the last 3 or 4 days of August of 15. Go to your charts. I mean, we were short from Apple on your program. I gave a signal 2 weeks before that or 3 weeks before that. Sell the Apple at 132. The high was 134. I said the target is 90. The Monday after the drop, we hit 90 and we covered. And we took that money, again on your program, we said, buy Amazon at 440. Your target is 1,000. Of course, I covered at 1,200. So I'm a schmuck. It's 1 to 2,000.
Well,
using Apple's money. Yeah. Remember, always use other people's money, not yourself.
Well, when you have the, you never can really know. Like I was about to say, were you coming on today? I was going to say, you know, out of all the things I don't mind being long here, even though it hasn't done very well so far, is the XLE and these oil indices, because oil is up 10% on the year and the indices are down. And then, of course, one of my buddies who's come on the show a lot calls me last night. He goes, "Are you looking at this natural gas?" And I go, "Why?" He goes, "I've never seen January below July before."
Mm-hmm.
So there's so much of it.
The spread.
He goes, "Well, natural gas liable to go under $2. Well, if natural gas goes under $2, there goes my 10% rise in the regular oil, because you know some of these people they're flaring it everywhere. They're not even they're burning it. The Permian and these other places they don't even want to collect it at that number.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's way more going on here than you ever can really. But all I remember,
especially oil, because you have the And gas, you know, oil and not gas. Who's on that gas? You just go around. I have a couple of guys from MBF. Actually, John knows him. Mark Fisher, out of New York. Actually, John, I think, introduced me to Mark. They're having the same issue too. That you gotta really get into underneath the hood to trade it. I don't trade crude. I basically rely on Tico. When Tico give a sell signal based on OTF, we sell. Or if he says a buy, is a buy. Let me see what the charts are saying right now. Hold on. And the fact that he pays his own credit card says he knows what he's doing.
Oh, yeah.
With a dog, he doesn't have an expense. He's paying his own way to include. Okay, that's good enough. Yeah, it's very neutral right now. 58.83 is a central line on an OTF basis. Now, we have another week to go on the next contract on G20. But he caught the drop very nicely back in right after Thanksgiving. That was a nice drop. He's been quiet. He did not catch. He did not ride it up. The last really valid good signal he gave was right before Thanksgiving.
We haven't had 1% move in a long time. Hey, Farrah, I got a question for you. Who's when it says Saudi Aramco hits $2 trillion market cap? How's that thing trade? Is it trading in dollars or is it trading in Saudi currency?
I have no clue, but it's only listed at Saudi at Riyadh.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Stock exchange. Yeah,
I think
what happened was that disclosure wise, they had some issues.
Do you think?
Were much tighter.
Yeah,
but the they only got 25% of what they were looking for. Okay, part of it is the oil wasn't supporting as much. I think there was some manipulation there too, and so. And then, of course, all the Khashoggi stuff. Basically, this can turn out to be a thought, you know. They expected a lot out of this. And $25 billion is nothing for those guys.
But, I mean, are we going to have an ADR soon? I mean, I can't imagine.
I don't know.
I mean,
but
maybe.
Sure.
Maybe.
Maybe they will do a secondary on the NYC. But they do have to tighten up on their GAAP stuff, you know, their accounting stuff. So.
Why? The New York Stock Exchange lets anybody on. They let, Alibaba on there.
I know, but Saudi Arabia is not China, okay? Listen. China is the next Saudi Arabia. You know why? AI. The next stage we're in is data, and that's China is going to lead in AI. Oil is going to be, oil as energy source. You know, this century, Saudi Arabia is China. So, but still, anywhere out there in the Middle East, I don't trust any of their accounting. None of them. Nope. I mean, it's a it's a closed state, just like China. But it's just a number of technocrats, and it's just too much chance of hanky-panky. I wouldn't trust their accounting.
Well, I guess I'm going to have to have somebody one of these days. Maybe you can do it when this thing, you know, goes a little further. But how the hell does
I got to read about it? I mean, how does that come in? I just got you know, I'm good at stuff that hits me right there, which is the current events I've looked at. But if you want to spend a little time on that, sure. Give me a week or two. I'll do some research, and then I would be more confident and also add value to the conversation.
Well, I was in Europe years ago, I toured like the Vienna Stock Exchange, where I thought it was an absolute riot for me. But I can't imagine dropping something of this size on the Vienna Stock Exchange or the Austrian Stock Exchange. I mean, the Saudi, I mean.
In Europe, the only one who could handle it would be either London or Frankfurt. Nothing else can. And then, of course, you've got to do a syndicated. You want to put it in Tokyo, you want to put it in New York. I just don't understand this. This is something. Why would you want to be only IPO'd on the Riyadh Exchange? It doesn't make sense.
Well, because that's the only place that would take you. But I mean, how do you actually get?
That's what I'm saying. You didn't comply with certain things. That was the only place that was willing to take you. That's not. I would have not done that. I would have, because they're not dying for cash. Sure, they need cash, but not dying. You hold on, repackage it, send it out properly. Take a year extra, do a year extra.
But if I have to,
but you got to do it right.
But if I have to buy it in Saudi currency, and say I had, you know, a $1 trillion fund and wanted to buy $50 billion worth of this, how the hell do I do the currency transaction with who?
Yeah, exactly. Well, the central bank. Here's the thing. Their central bank. In 2007, no. Yeah. It was late. No, it was early October, maybe early fall 2007. One of the hedge funds, I can't say who it was, for reason, sent me a chart of their stock exchange. Oil was riding high. And they had sold off year to date, so it would be like 9 months, I think, in 2007, 40%. But he didn't put down the name of the exchange. He just says, what's wrong with this chart? And I said, you got to give me a little bit more. They said the price of the oil. I said, I've got to be Saudis. I went on verified it. Yeah, it was Saudis. He goes, Barry, I'm scared to death. Something is wrong here. Oil is riding high. These guys are down 40%.
Well, same things.
We got a problem coming. I just don't know where. Of course, he was the only ahead of us 1 year. And then you saw what happened. By the time you get to October of 2008, everybody and his brother knew they were effed.
Well, you wonder what the central banks are involved here. This thing, I'm not going to say this on the air, but my guess is it's got to be trading in dollars. There's not enough Saudi currency to have a $2 trillion market cap in a stock, is there?
I don't know what it is. Listen.
Yeah, but it's French. Right? Well, we'll figure it out, but I'm just.
I mean, but I'll just said that they're dollar denominated. There's no peg, okay? So they could print whatever they want.
Yeah, I suppose.
But think about it. You're assuming there's a peg. There is none.
Well, what I'm assuming is if there must be people who have dollars that are buying it. Because
they get paid in dollars, remember. They have a lot of dollar reserves, too.
Yeah, they can do
because
that.
Because they get paid for the oil in dollars.
Right.
That's how we kept the currency. That's why do you think we do this military support? We're doing that to make sure they don't go out there and switch to euro or yuan. Right? Because that would be a major disaster for us. So in exchange for doing that, they're using dollars for their oil sales. Well, that means they're flush with oil, with the dollars themselves.
Well,
so as long as there's a, if you're local in Saudi, you want to buy some. That would be one problem. But you don't have people like that running around in size. But the outside, you know, there's a dollar coming in, right? They're flush with dollar. They can. Good transaction for you in dollars.
Well,
I hope this is.
I'm going to do some research today because I might have. Who knows? I might have a client that wants to buy somebody. I find out if I can or I can't.
Well, I would love to help you, but it won't be today. I'm just jammed here.
Well, I'll bet.
After all, I'll look at it tonight and get back.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised if IB comes through pretty fast. But if anybody can do it, they'll probably be able to do it. But
yeah.
But you wonder.
I mean, there is exchange rates out there for some crazy stuff. You won't believe. If you do some research, you'll see these exchangers, okay, that are making markets on some crazy currencies out there. You wouldn't think it was, was volatile, and the spreads are wide.
It's hard
in Iran. If you want to see what's happening in Iran, just look at their spreads on their currency. But how it's coded and by who it's coded, at times could be very dubious. You're not exactly dealing with J.P. Morgan.
It's hard enough with what you do and what I do to try and, you know, manage money well for people, and if they want to be a little more aggressive, to find individual trades that work. It's hard enough to do that. The last thing you want to do is do a trade in Japan where every time, if you actually have a winner, you got to worry about if you lost money on the yen in the meantime. I mean, you know, the last thing you want to do is have a two-step transaction of this. One's plenty. If you want to trade the currency, trade the currency. If you want to trade the stock, trade the stock. But try and do them both on the same trade. I don't know if I want any part of that. Just saying.
Well, yeah, and then on a bad situation, whatever you make on this end, you can give a good portion of it back on the
Well, that's my point. Fari, take care of yourself, bud. Talk at you next week. SP Futures down 2, NASDAQ Futures down 975. A little bit of movement to the downside, but very little. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks, Mr. David Adelman.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain?
Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber, and Mr. David Andelman this morning to answer some interesting questions regarding natural gas in Saudi Aramco. Hope he's ready. S&P futures down 275. Nasdaq futures down 1350. We were pretty much roughly unchanged up until a few minutes ago. We dipped a little bit. Part of that has to do with Apple just dropped $2.50. It's down 260. So something. There's a big powwow in the White House, I think it's tonight or tomorrow morning or something, but they're going to go over their policy for the big day Sunday, tariff or no tariff. She loves me not, as they used to say. Dow futures down 43. Over in Europe, we've got very slow. DAX down 5 points, call that flat. FTSE up 29. They're going to vote today, which is somewhat of a Brexit, I guess, thing, even though it's not on Brexit. They're voting for politicians. Back around down 3, call that flat. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 32. By 1%, Shanghai down 8.3%. Hang Seng, what a rally though. They've been up, down. Up 348, that's 1.3%. They're moving over to like 1% a day, unlike everybody else. Bonds, 10-year back down to 1.78. De Bund, minus 0.33. And the Japan, just I was ready to cheer this morning that it was going to go through break even. It didn't. It's minus 0.02. It backed off some. Gold rallying another $8, 1483. Trying to make it back to 1500. Silver up 12, trying to make it back to 17 at 1688. Copper 277. It's finally moved up a little bit. So you've had some movement on some of the stocks like Freeport, Mac, ran a few two totally dead companies are actually showing a little bit, not only a little bit of movement the last few days, but actually a little bit of option activity. Like talk about waking something up from the grave. But now whether as soon as they move up a little bit, it's going to be whacked like whack-a-moles. I don't know. I'll ask David that. Anybody up for us? Traffic, weather, sports. So I need one of these contracts. 8 years, $30 million a year, I could do that.
Can you pitch?
I've got a knuckleball. I could go. I'll work on a knuckleball. I got one by spring.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Pretty good look at the traffic this morning as far as accidents are concerned. Good news for the most part. No issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Traffic volumes are steady and normal and no accidents to report. Same for the Eisenhower, Stevenson. Traffic building around Cicero, but no accidents in either direction. Southside expressways are looking good. That earlier crash on I-57 is all clear. Only issues right now are in the suburbs, and they're off the expressways. In Woodridge, southwest suburb, 87th Street at Woodward Avenue, there is an accident. Directly north of there, North Avenue at Main Street in Lombard, there is a crash. And then west of there, past Wheaton, Roosevelt Road at Crest Road, there is an accident. One other crash to report, that's in the northern suburbs, Route 176 at Darrell Road, there is a crash. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, overcast and cold early, and then we'll warm up a bit this afternoon with high wind gusts and a high of 45 degrees, so that'll feel nice. Right now, it is cloudy and 27 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 68 today. Right now, it's mostly clear and 48. In sports, the Bulls blew out the Atlanta Hawks last night, 136-102. Suns lost at home to the Grizzlies, 115-108. College hoops, it was Illinois over number 5 Michigan down in Champaign, 71-62. The two Arizona teams were in action as well. Arizona blew out Omaha, 99-49. Arizona State squeaked by Prairie View A&M, 88-79. And as we touched on in the last hour, congrats to Hawk Harrelson, longtime White Sox broadcaster who recently retired, was given the Ford C. Frick Award from the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Fort Frick was the commissioner of the American League for a long time, if I recall.
That sounds right to me, but let me look that up.
Hey, while you're doing that, two things out of you, if you don't mind. One, look up Wilbur Wood's record. And I'm going to say 1 year he was like 21-20 with like 400 innings pitched. Now, he wasn't like he was, 20-4 or anything like Bob Gibson, but what do you suppose somebody would be worth today that could eat up those kind of innings?
They'd be worth a lot.
I mean, David, how are you?
And he started and relieved.
Yeah.
I mean, at one point he was primarily a closer. At one point he was primarily a starter. And at one point he was both.
He was both.
So, your first question, Ford Frick was an American sports writer and baseball executive. After working as a teacher and as a sports writer for the New York American, he served as public relations director of the National League, then as the league's president from 1934 to 1951. So, you had the wrong league.
Okay.
But he was the president of the National League. Wilbur Wood had a career ERA of 3.24, 164 wins, 156 losses. So he's basically a 500 pitcher his whole career, but a very good pitcher nonetheless, in spite of one loss record. I'm trying to find that he had a 24-20 season, a 24-17 season, 22-13, 20-19.
So how many innings did he pitch in like the 24-20?
Let me find innings.
I'm going to say 400.
Let's see. I don't know why it's taking me so long to find innings pitched. Here we go. Innings pitched. He never had 400, never came close to 400,
okay,
but he did get well into the 300s in the prime of his career. And the highest he ever pitched was in 1972. He went 24-17 and had 376 innings pitched.
That's pretty close.
That's pretty close to 400.
And then 1973, he had 359 innings pitched. And then 1974 with the White Sox, 320. And then 75, 291.
So I'd say a guy like that today, it wouldn't happen, but because they have, the innings all compartmentalized off, I would say a guy like that, if he was in the 20, 25, 27, 29 years old, would make $35
million. Well, he was well under it. He had to be under
it. A guy with a 3.24 ERA is going to make a lot of money. Innings pitch, you're right. Now
350 innings, that guy'd make $35 million.
Well, guys, they wouldn't. I mean, obviously, like you said, they very, very few guys pitch 200 innings these days.
Right.
Very few. So I would say maybe 5% of guys hit 200 innings, and that's because the managers don't let them, and the teams don't let them. But
did he give up?
But he was primarily a knuckleball pitcher, so you didn't really. And the way he threw it, he obviously wasn't injury prone. And so a guy like that, if he existed, and it would be tough in today's standards, but a guy like that would make a ton of money.
No question about it.
Manny, the guy, did he average less than a hit an inning? Because that's usually what you want to see in people.
I would say, in the big year when he went 376 innings, he only allowed 325 hits.
That's really good.
Yeah, the following year he went 359 innings, but he allowed 381 hits. He had many years where he had less hits than innings.
Now, I know you're gonna jump all over me on this, as you usually do, but I'm gonna say, if there was any way to find out, the person who pitched, I'm gonna say regular, the next day, probably had some of his best years. Following a knuckleball.
Could very well be. Who was the...
I'm sure it was different every year, but I'm saying, if you put me in a rotation, I would love, if I was a fastball pitcher, to follow a knuckleballer.
Plus, he ate up so many innings that you didn't have to wear out the bullpen. Not only was he the starter, but he was the bullpen, too.
Yeah, they got relieved, too. So it's really kind of crazy. All right, David, there's questions on the table this morning that maybe only you can answer. Is there any chance to trade the Saudi Aramco? There's no ADRs yet. Is it traded in the Saudi currency?
I don't know the answer to that. They were touting XLP, which has had, a vicious break, the oil and gas ETFs. I'm not sure that's a good, a good alternative. Maybe, and I can't I can't, you know, attest to what kind of mix they have between crude oil and gas. I know they're trying to go more towards, you know, at least propping up their gas versus the oil, but I don't know that. You had mentioned before I came on natural gas, and just, I mean, I've never traded it, nor had a client that I know of that's traded it, but just off the chart, basis the January future, huge, it's 228 and change, at 250, 251 actually, there's huge resistance. If you get above that, it project about 287. I looked at the weekly continuation charts, literally all the way to 291, 289 to 291 on the long-term charts is enormous resistance. You know, I don't see anything above that given, you know, the touts and the supply that we have. Above 291, it would project to $4, but I don't see that happening right now.
Our buddy Shanny says he's never seen in December the January future less than the July.
And that tells you that oversupply and not a great deal of demand. And, you know, and I mean, again, I'm not trying to play his game. He's forgotten more than I know about natural gas as well as energy. But, you know, in general, other than Halloween snow and a few bouts of cold, at least so far, and it's early, we've had, you know, relatively mild, you know, winter, and I'm sure the stocks are huge.
Yeah, they were saying that the stocks are absolutely massive, and I guess they're
huge.
They're flaring them in a lot of these fields.
Right.
I don't think I have not heard from, anyway, we had a listener, lady listener from Pennsylvania. She came here years and years ago on a convention or something. She happened to listen to her on the air. Once in a while I'd get an email from her. I haven't heard from her in 5 years, but her husband, you know, you ever drive through Pennsylvania, and I don't know if you ever met him, but it's really weird. There's nothing but mountains and, like, forest, right? It's not like, you know, the Rockies where there's mountains, but you can kind of see stuff up there. It's just all forested stuff. And every once in a while you see a river, and it'll be like some you know, city carved out along the side of the river next to the mountain, and it'll be like a steel mill or something, and people live there. But you get the idea, who the hell owns the tops of these mountains, and what do they do? Well, it turns out her husband and a group of guys, you know, testosterone group, have a hunting cabin up there, and they go up there every weekend during the season and, you know, blast deer and blast whatever you can be blasting, I guess. And that's their shtick. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people in the country who do that, and I'm not going to say anything bad about it, but they own the place. So all of a sudden, one day, one of these oil companies comes by and says, you know, we want to be able to drill, or we want to frack in, on your mountain, basically. And they give them a big chunk of change, and they claim they have to start in 5 years, or else they can keep the change. Well, you know, the big chunk of change, and, you know, do whatever they want. But so they said they were going to build a road, and they were obligated to put, you know, take the road out when they were done, and put the area back into, you know, pristine condition. I don't know how you do that, but they claimed they were going to. And, you know, like 4 years and in 10 months they start doing something, because that was the contract. You know what they do, Manny and David? They lay temporary pipelines across, like, other people's property into where they can get into a pipeline, or they can put it into trucks or whatever. So there's a pipeline that's essentially not really pipe. It's, you know, it's like fire hose running above ground. And they started doing something, and I think they just bagged it. And, you know, they left them with the dough, and I don't know if they were fixed the road. It cost $1.5 million to build the road, and I don't know if they're still in business. I think they just left. One of the most amazing things, you know, they get once in a while, used to get it once in a while on the Bloomberg. Somebody does, like, these interactive maps that are really neat. I mean, to me it's high tech, I guess, but they showed a map of where all the fracking was going to be, and this is 7-8 years ago when the stuff kind of just started, or 10 years ago, and all of a sudden you see, like, nobody's got anything. It must have gone back to, like, 2000 or whatever, and you start seeing, you know, North Dakota, and then you start seeing Texas, and it starts to just go all over the place. And then you start getting into western Pennsylvania, northeast Ohio. You had a few pop up in southern Illinois because we were going to do some fracking down there, as you recall. Then all of a sudden, as the price of oil went down, you see all the purple lights dropping off the map. Well, there's none in Illinois, there's none in Ohio, and very few in western Pennsylvania. But everybody went out and bought all this property and cut all these deals, and then there's, like, nothing there. But I think there, the stuff they did do, from the one email I remember, said it was very gaseous, and they were actually sending gas through those pipes more than oil. So a lot of this stuff, if you're not flaring it off, I mean, how much have they flared off on the North Slope in the last 50 years, David? Like enough to heat Chicago. I mean,
absolutely no idea.
But, I mean, in those days, Maddie, what happened was they built a pipeline, because they knew they had gas up there. Okay, so the smart thing would have done is to put a natural gas pipeline next to the oil pipeline. All right, but that wouldn't do you any good, because if you get the gas down to, well, where's that thing, the terminal? It's in, what's the name of the city in Alaska where it goes to? Anyway, but you can pick up the oil in ships. But at that time, there was no...
Juneau? Is it Juneau?
No. It's, where did the ship, crack and all the oil leaked out?
Oh, I know. Yeah, the Prudhoe?
Yeah, Prudhoe Bay. I don't know the name of the city, but the, anyway, but there was no technology in those days to liquefy natural gas. So they just flared off up there. I mean, it was just big, huge natural gas fires. So one of the things they were thinking about doing is trying to hook into the Canadian pipeline up there, which heads to the Midwest. And I don't think that's ever been built, David. And I don't know why not. Why waste all that gas? I mean,
yeah, I don't know. I know there was, legal fights back and forth after the Prudhoe Bay issue, and some were for, reconnecting, some were not. I do not know how that ever turned out.
Well, the smartest way to do it would be to go into Canada and connect into their natural gas pipeline into the U.S. Of course, nobody wanted to do that, because then we'd be beholden to Canadians. Who cares? We just don't just don't waste the stuff and burn it. What's the point of that?
Right.
At least if you're going to burn natural gas, heat somebody's house. Don't just burn it.
Right.
I mean, I digress. But I was talking to Fari. I don't see how. Again, by next week we'll figure this out, David. But how the hell could anything in Saudi Arabia have a $2 trillion market cap if you get a client that wants to buy $20 billion worth of stuff? How do you do that currency transaction? Or, unless it's traded in dollars, which I wouldn't be a bit surprised if it was.
I don't have an answer. The fact of the matter is, and it's so funny that the prince said, I want $2 trillion, and it rallied the 10% daily limit that they have over there to 1.88, trillion total capitalization, and now 2 trillion. I mean, part of it, I think, and I'm not trying to say, oh, it's worth it, buy it. I would never. That said, and it somehow, some way reached to the exact valuation that he demanded.
Yeah.
But part of it, I think, is that they, issued such a small portion of the total, outstanding stocks, so that, put a premium, on shares that investors and institutions wanted. But it seems, it's much more by, I think they said, $500 billion more than 204 of our energy companies, all of them. I mean, ConocoPhillips and ExxonMobil and, Chevron and all the Schlumberger and all the big ones, Halliburton, all put together, $500 billion more than all of them put together. Seems, just on the surface, outrageous.
Well, I haven't heard of it in ages, but it didn't approach this kind of money, but wasn't Pemex worth a real lot for a long time? I mean, more than any of our companies or a bunch together?
Yeah, I vaguely remember that. That's a long time ago.
Yeah, what happened to those guys? I mean, they're still pumping oil.
I don't know, Chief.
Yeah, I don't know the answer. Boy, they were one of the hottest stocks on the floor. That's the Mexican oil company. And obviously,
yeah,
they're still producing a lot of oil.
For a while, I believe there was an ADR of one of the huge Russian ones as well.
That I don't remember, because I know one of my buddies had
began with an L, but I can't remember the name. And then all of a sudden, there was issues with the management, and Russia said sorry, and all of a sudden, I don't know how it ended, but the company, I think, disappeared.
Well, I've never been comfortable having any of my clients trading in stuff that I didn't understand. I mean, I've yet to have anybody in, what's Jack Ma's place? Alibaba, right?
Right.
I
knew you were going to say that, by the way, because you were saying, how do you own a share? And it's been successful, and with full disclosure, I do own a little bit covered with calls. But, when you were saying, hey, it's not a real share of stock because of lack of management votes off the coast, Bermuda. I mean, I remember that, and I'm not going against that, But it's been, you know, it's so huge, and it's largely been successful.
Well, I think what you get, and this is going back, I think what you get is the income stream out of Bermuda. There's
right.
no assets because the Chinese government can take the assets. So I think actually all the assets were in the name of Jack Ma. So in other words, if they stopped paying you, you couldn't go in like a trucking company and sell all the trucks and at least, you know, get pennies on the dollar. All that stuff is owned in China. So there's no assets, but the income you have a piece of, as long as the income flows from China to Bermuda.
And I wonder, even though, again, with full disclosure, I own, I don't know, a few hundred shares across the account, so it's not a big position, but I do have a little. I wonder just how, with the floating of the ADR in Hong Kong, how that affects it. Does it dilute it? I mean, the stock has acted well even since the secondary listing, but who knows?
Well, I don't know.
That's why I really like to sell calls and sell calls and sell calls.
Well, yeah, and I've been confusing about a lot of things this week, David. I mean, we had a couple guys earlier in the week. We were talking about why we actually was with Jeff Joseph, the Luckbox magazine, and they've had some people do some work on in the magazine. By the way, the articles in there are spectacular. If anybody wants to read them, and you can come to our site and the Stocks and Jocks site, and you can get a free magazine. Although you don't get the really cool color like we get because we get the actual magazine. But the idea that as the Fed continues to pump stuff in and the market, you know what really has got me nervous, David, is that the market, it's not going down here, but it's also not going up. These guys are pouring 9% in, okay? I get this odd feeling that it's like somebody on heroin. It takes more and more heroin every week to get just as high. And if they can't pump the market up with 9%, what are they going to do, 12, 14? I mean, how hard?
You know, I get what you're saying, and you follow those numbers and are much more fundamentalist than I am. That said, the fact that it's kind of stalled, the index is 0.5% off highs, at this point I think that's healthy because from a technical standpoint you reduce extension and price momentum oscillator is number one. But beyond that, let's say you had no money committed to the market. You didn't own a share and you were sitting on $100,000. You know, in front of the UK vote on Brexit today, ECB policy, which they left rates unchanged, the Fed yesterday, and the possibility of tariffs, you know, Saturday night. I mean, would you want to take a position or would you want to let the market kind of settle in at least till next week? And if they do slap tariffs on, or even if they don't, or if there's a delay and there's more uncertainty, chances are, even if it's just a 2 or 3% break, you can buy the market on sale next week. Why would you commit today?
Well, and I'll answer the question this way, obtusely. How's that? In 2008, I was able to put people in at the top, pretty much, because everybody wanted to get in. And the puts were so cheap, I think they were like at 8 or 9 vol. And I was able to actually bought extras. So when 2007, 8 happened, we actually made some money for people because I bought extra ones. Because right now, you run the risk, if you want to hedge yourself, if you buy the indexes and buy the puts to protect yourself, you're pushing a 15, 16 vol. And so you also run the risk of 3 weeks from now, all this stuff settles down, the market doesn't go anywhere, and all of a sudden the puts just go down because they're high. So my question is,
if you were uncommitted to the market, and let's pretend that you were even bullish at these levels, why wouldn't you wait at least 1 to 3 weeks?
I would wait 1 to 3 weeks, not only for the market, but I'd wait because the cost of insurance is too high.
Right, I agree.
And that's somewhat of a, but what I'm saying, David, is we're doing more and more to get to the same place, and I don't know what's
going on. But it may just be the calendar.
Could be.
Maybe next week when all these geopolitical things, you know, at least alleviate, I don't want to say disappear, but alleviate a little bit, maybe, you know, the market gets to quote-unquote normal and the fundamentals and the technicals, for that matter, are either good or they're bad.
Well, if we wander through the next 2 weeks without any problem, Britain, here, any place, in Hong Kong, and this amount of money is coming in, I gotta believe that we'll be, we could have a rip snort in January. Because there's, because there's pails of,
and
the, there's
and,
pails
and
of dollars.
Seasonal, other than 2018 into the early part of 2019, is good through January 10th to 15th.
But I just, what worries me the most, is I remember 2000, and when things got so narrow, and we were talking earlier in the week, that, you know, that, now everybody wants stocks to be high priced because they're only in, you know, they're not in every man's hands. And I, you know, I talked earlier about Microsoft and Apple have been 1,100 points in the Dow this year. That if we have some kind of a correction more than 2 or 3 or 4%, you know, say 15 or 20, I'm not predicting that, but if we do, those are the stocks, just like in 2000, the ones that were the highest of flyers were the deepest of swimmers.
And you can look on the other side of the coin and say the S&P, though weighted, and this is certainly not the average stock, is up, whatever, 24%. Where would the S&P and the Dow be if Boeing didn't have this, you know, 737 MAX problem?
Well, I mean,
Boeing, since it's the heaviest weight because of price,
well,
in the Dow.
We'll talk more about that on Monday, because they had a huge run-up to that point. But, yes, you are absolutely correct. S&P futures down 150, NASDAQ futures down 8. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.